Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Mix and match 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries for $2.99 each when you buy three. Take advantage of this exclusive digital deal. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast Untrimmed Twin Pack, $3.97 per pound, limit one package. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
They call my plan Bidenomics. Guess what?
It's working.
I will say that there have been so many accomplishments under this administration, it can be difficult to list them in a distilled way.
I do not hate anyone. So I say this gently. The Biden administration sucks.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
We're down to 7 days of the Biden administration sucking. They're going to suck a lot here in the last week, but we are on the final countdown. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, on a beautiful, sunny, yet really, really cold day in St. Louis. How are you, Hall of Famer Fred Bottomer?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Sue? Sorry, I should have done ladies first.
Oh,
My fault. I wasn't even going in order around the room. Ethan's got all his Minnesota Vikings gear on today because he's a Vikings. I've never really been able to figure out why you're a Vikings fan, but you're a Vikings fan,
oh,
right?
Wait, married into a Vikings
That's
family.
It.
Oh, is that what happened?
Wife's family's all from Minnesota. Okay.
You can get a vaccine for that, though, I think. It's kind of like the Cubs virus.
I'm going to decline a comment on that.
That should be a good game tonight. Wow. Wow, lots of good football over the week. Well, Saturday's games weren't that great. Yesterday's games were really good in the Commanders. How about my guy, Jaden Daniels?
Rest in peace to your Packers, though.
That's all right. They're going to be fine. You know, I don't know that they're Super Bowl bound even next year, but I'm not too worried. I didn't think they
would
beat the Eagles. Right, they do. I think they need to work on some offensive weapons, in particular ones that don't get injured every game. Christian Watson. We love Christian Watson, but he's always hurt. But, yeah, last night's game, holy cow, that was
great. I
got
to tell you. I don't think I've ever heard footballs go doink off of goalposts louder than they did this weekend.
Really?
They've really mic'd
doink?
Those things
yeah,
up.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Do you want to explain the doink to Sue?
Well,
in case
I mean, I've heard it, but
but one of them hit it and went through for the winner. Another one hit it and didn't go through.
Yeah.
Earlier in another game.
That's funny.
But it's just
game.
So loud and ringing. It's amazing.
And that poor guy last night that ended up winning the game for the Commanders. But, I mean, there's this video that's out there of him going out to kick the field goal where he's messing with his hair. Now, he has very little hair, not because he's bald, but he's got a real tight, high and tight haircut. And he's so nervous. He's just kind of messing with his hair. And then he tries to put his helmet on. He's messing with it again. His hair's not moving. He's just trying to put the helmet on.
That's adorable.
And then that's one of the doinks. And it goes in, and the Commanders win that game, and it
doesn't
go to overtime.
And they had him on the sidelines before the kick, taking his shoe off and straightening his sock like 7 times in a row.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Oh,
no. He's a ritual guy.
Yeah. Well, a lot of these athletes are, though. They really are. They have, superstitions. Then there's A.J. Brown. He's reading a book on the sidelines yesterday. I love that, too.
And that book is number one now on the Amazon bestseller list.
What is it? I saved this earlier.
It is called Inner Excellence.
Inner Excellence.
And he was reading the part that says how to keep a clear mind.
Yeah, there you go. Keeping his brain strong and his body strong. Well, we have a lot to cover today. A lot of it's going to focus on the fires again. And I just... I don't know how anyone else is, but I cannot get away from this stuff. I mean, every time that I hear something or I see something on Twitter, YouTube TV, I'm guessing other services have the same thing, but I can always tune into Fox 11 in Los Angeles. And I watched a lot of Fox 11 coverage over the weekend. And Friday was interesting, Sue. When we left the air on Friday night, things were relatively calm going into the overnight. And then they had some concern as the winds were kicking up and the flames started kind of going in the other direction into the San Fernando Valley. There was even some fear that they were going to close the 405 freeway on Friday night. They never had to do that. And I have to, one of the reasons I want to talk about this is I have to give credit here to these fire crews. We know that a week ago and what happened in Palisades and Altadena, we're finding out, is just as, devastated as well. But these fire crews over the weekend, you know, they're doing everything they possibly can.
Yeah.
So on Saturday, before football, and I was kind of going back and forth, tuning into Fox 11, and all of a sudden at like 10:30 in the morning on Saturday, 10:30 local time out there, something kind of sparked up, and they got concerned. And then a house caught on fire, like one of these big mansions. And I can't even remember geographically exactly where it was. This was the Palisades fire. And this thing just burned to ground. So I sat there and I watched that coverage for a couple hours back and forth. And it was just like watching something from a week ago where it took about 2 hours from start to finish for this house to be completely nothing. It just completely burned to the ground. Yeah, about 2 hours.
So depressing.
But you have firefighters all around because they're worried that there's going to be, you know, embers flying around. So they got that under control, and things were pretty good yesterday. I'd say that they were, you know, really good. There's a lot of frustration still about the cause and all these questions, but the fires were somewhat manageable, somewhat. Well, now we have what's about to happen, and it's not going to be good. And you know, one of the things that's
What's about to happen?
The high winds are going to kick in into tomorrow. We're talking 60 to 75 mile per hour winds. Okay, maybe they're not the 90 mile an hour winds, but that's, you can't do anything about those. And see, one of the things, and Fred and I, we were talking about this earlier, they don't know exactly what caused all these fires. So there's some theories about the Palisades fire in particular, that New Year's Eve, people were shooting off fireworks, and there was another fire. I didn't know this until this morning. There was another fire that they fought for hours with helicopters in Pacific Palisades a week before last Tuesday.
Wow.
So one of the theories is that the wind kicked up, maybe that fire was still burning, you know, with the embers, and then it just kicked up. They don't know, though. They really don't know. And you have more questions about whether or not some of these fires are set by other people. So just think about the next 24 hours. They're still trying to contain the fires that are out there. And they've had some success with some of the, and I don't know all of them to recite them to you by name, but a handful of them have been, you know, contained where they're no longer a danger. But, you know, in this situation for the next 24, however long it is, 48 hours, you've got numbskulls out there that are lighting fires. I mean, all it would take is just one little fire, and then all of a sudden the wind kicks up and takes it to wherever, and you have another disaster. The good news is they're, you know, they're really spreading retardant. They're trying to make things as wet as possible. One of the things that I was noticing on Saturday, Sue, and this is just unbelievable when you think about it. You have, I don't know how many gallons these helicopters have or these planes, but thousands of gallons of water, right?
Oh, yeah.
Dropping them onto big, big flames, and you see the flames go out for like a second, right? Oh, that looks good. And then it's like the water is being evaporated in midair
because
the intensity of the fires. It's
that
really
is seriously dry.
It is really dry. And then, you know, when you see the things that are just burning, you know, there's a little fire. White smoke's good, by the way. You know, so if you see white smoke, they're having success. But with that house in particular, you know, think about everything we have in our houses. You know, the furniture, all the petroleum-based products, they just completely burn out of control.
And think of how hard it must be to actually hit the target when you're dropping water.
Right?
From that high up. And all the water that doesn't hit the target.
Yeah, they were pretty good at hitting the targets, but you're
amazing,
It is amazing when you think about it. So now we got more daunting situations here for the, you know, the time being.
I think that we're very well prepared for the next event, but that's never going to be, we're never sure that we're going to be able to catch the next fire and keep it small. They said 70 mile an hour winds. It's going to be very difficult to contain that fire. That's why we ask all residents in a brush-prone area to be prepared to evacuate.
Yeah, and some of the stories, and I'm going to get to those here that are emerging, and just some of the questions about how to rebuild are fascinating and really, really tragic and sad as well. But let me kind of tell you what's coming up here on the show this afternoon. Mark did some baking over the weekend. I have some cookies to share.
All right.
It's very important. These are amongst my best friend, I'm just going to say, and so you might want to dabble in these. These are white chunk macadamia with cranberry cookies.
Oh, that looks nice.
And I knocked it out of the park. I'm just going to say humbly. Now, I made some chocolate chip cookies on Saturday, and they kind of sucked. I threw half of them out. I tried a different recipe, but I tried these and they're wonderful. They're awesome. Maybe one of the best cookies, Fred, you'll ever have in your life. I'm just saying.
Wow.
I had a friend over yesterday who had never had, this is amazing to me, she had never had a white chunk macadamia nut cranberry cookie in her life.
That's amazing to you?
Yes.
When did you start eating them?
Long time ago. I've been eating cookies like that for a long time. Are you kidding me? There's not a cookie that you can really get by me. But what I told her was is that despite the fact that she's never had a cookie like that, even if she had had a cookie like this, this would be amongst the best she's ever had in her life.
Well, of course. Humility, a large yes. part of baking.
Baking in particular. Yeah. Now I have a batch sitting in the garage right now of, I'm still trying to go to town on these oatmeal cookies. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I realize that this is what you've been waiting for all weekend long when the show opens to find out
my cookie baking. I have a good recipe for oatmeal with chocolate chips instead of raisins.
I made these with raisins, but I'm going to cook these tonight because they're chilling. My dough is chilling, and I'll have some of those for you tomorrow. But we got Scott Jennings coming up here in a couple of minutes, and we have the answer to the million-dollar question. Hey, did he ever get my package that I sent for Christmas? We'll share that. Sue's News in the next hour. Brian Ping will be here from KNX in Los Angeles. I've been listening to a lot of KNX, and here's a story that I heard on my way in. I'm driving in, listening to this. Fred, I was texting you because I didn't want to forget to tell this story. Put yourself in the situation of a homeowner out there, not really even knowing if you have a house or what the situation might be. So there was one guy yesterday, and this is the story that I heard being told on KNX. He waited 11 hours because the police didn't want him going into Pacific Palisades. There's concern about, you know, not only fires kicking up again, so safety issues, but whether or not there's toxicity to, you know, the fire remains. So the guy waits 11 hours. He finally gets in. He finds out that his home is still standing, but it had been looted. So the looting situation, there are people getting into these areas. So the cops are trying to keep people out, and they have curfews, et cetera. But think about it. How much people are going to be able to sneak into homes?
It's just too much area.
Yeah, it really is. But we'll talk about that with Brian in the next hour. We got Cusimano to talk some football and some hockey and some baseball maybe this afternoon. Last week I told the story, and I think it's really important, especially for people who might want to get their arms around the issue of what censorship looked like from the Biden administration in the past years. Margie Conklin, who is a managing editor of the Free Press, wrote about this last week, and she really gave a very... You know, it was like exhibit A of a story that she had written during the pandemic that virtually disappeared before her eyes. And it was because of some of the spiking that was done on Facebook and social media. So we have that coming up here. Scott Faughn from Jeff City. Mike Kehoe was inaugurated as the new governor of Missouri a little bit earlier today. And we're going to celebrate that a little bit and talk about what's coming up in Jeff City a little later as well. Let's see what else I wanted to start with here this afternoon, because the blame game is kind of interesting going back and forth. One of the things that, you know, going back to what people might be experiencing in L.A., Sue, I talked about this last week. How do you even know where to start, right? Now, you have a situation, and these are some pretty staggering numbers. I think they'll be able to be relatable here in St. Louis. Let's say you bought a, you know, $400,000, $500,000 home back in 2018, 2017.
Right.
It's, you know, you made some money here. Maybe it's worth $100,000, $150,000 more right now. You feel pretty good about that. That's part of your wealth, right? Mm-hmm. That's part of your equity, is part of the money that you have. And I think my guess would be, when you're thinking about future plans in retirement, if you have your home paid off in particular, it's a good investment, the property values are rising, you feel good about that. So listen to some of the examples. I have to give credit here to the Wall Street Journal. They've sent a team of reporters to Los Angeles. They're doing a really good job in covering some of the aspects here. And they talk about a woman by the name of Sylvia Sweeney and her husband, Bob Honeychurch. They say they bought their 3-bedroom home nestled in the foothills of the San Gabriel Valley for $780,000 in 2009. It was worth, at the start of this year, $1.6 million, right? Well, they lost everything. They lost their home, and she says it was our beautiful dream home. It was our primary wealth. So that home is now gone. What does that mean when it comes to, you know, getting it rebuilt or insurance or anything along those lines? Well, sometimes when you look at the numbers here and the way that they described it in the journal, I don't know how people are going to be able to do it. They talk about how Ms. Sweeney never planned to leave Altadena, was going to pass her house on to her daughter, but she doesn't even know if she can, you know, rebuild because they're waiting on insurance. They talk about a guy by the name of Jim Papik who ran a plumbing business. You know, some of the people in Pacific Palisades, they weren't the wealthy celebrities. They had bought their homes decades ago when they weren't, you know, outrageously expensive. So this guy, Jim Papik, had a two-bedroom, one-bathroom home on Sunset. He bought it for $455,000 in 1988. Well, that damn thing's valued at $3.7 million right now. And it's gone. It is completely gone. It's rubbles. They say that in one of these situations, they were told that the insurance would cover $800,000 to rebuild and $12,000 a month in rent with access to the rental payments for 2 or 3 years. Hey, that sounds great, but you still have a $2,200 mortgage, and the $800,000 that they're going to give her to rebuild doesn't even scratch the surface. Her quote in the article is, yeah, that seems like a lot of money if you're in Iowa or maybe if you're in Missouri, but how will she rebuild her home in the Palisades? Because the average home is like $3.4 million. So you have crazy things happening. Here's another thing. And I talked about this. My friend, I'm going to Vegas this week, and my friend Rick Niner, who grew up here in the St. Louis area, he does business because he manages a company on the West Coast. And for a while, they're not doing this right now, but they made him office in Pasadena. He's always lived for the last 30 years or so, 25 years, 28 years in Las Vegas. But company was cool with that, but they said, hey, when they promoted him, you have to have an office and, you know, every once in a while come in here. So he's got a condo in Pasadena, which virtually is untouched. He barely goes to, you know, the condo. And I've been in it. It's essentially the size of this studio and maybe one other studio. But I told him, like, and first of all, he could Airbnb this thing out for the Rose Parade or something like
that. Oh, that's a good idea. Is it still there?
He doesn't want to mess with it. But, yeah, his condo is fine. But this is how I bring it up. You've got a rental market out there that is nuts. In the Wall Street Journal article, they said bidding wars are breaking out for leases in some of the remaining coveted areas. So a rental last week was going for $25,000 a month. Almost instantly, tenants were offering $40,000 a month. Now, keep in mind, these are people with means, right?
Well, yeah.
So they have millions of dollars, but they're willing to pay that. There is a law in California which bans rent increases of more than 10%. I don't know exactly how they, you know, how they figure that out, but that's another one of those things that's a crisis here is how, even if you can find a place, right? You got to be able to find a place.
Yeah.
I told Rick, I'm like, I think he's crazy for not renting the place because he could cash flow on that
Why
thing like crazy.
He?
Well, because then, you know, he doesn't have access to it and there's
stay in a hotel,
property
make 40
management.
Grand a month. Are you kidding me?
Sue, I think you're right. I'm going to tell him maybe make the offer. I can be his property manager and I'll I'll do some of the work. We're coming back with Scott Jennings, ladies and gentlemen, his first appearance of 2025 coming up.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So you're going to dare have a cookie this afternoon? You're going to let that to Ethan and Fred?
I'm going to leave it to the boys.
Oh man, they're good. They're really good. Very proud of him. Wiggins had one earlier. He was thrilled with it. So my baking adventure continues. I should have sent some of my cookies to Scott Jennings in Louisville, but he never opens his packages, so they would have sat there for like weeks or something like that. How are you, Jennings?
I'm fine. I do open my packages. I just wasn't there to receive the package that you sent, and I did open it when I returned to my home residence.
Well, and I have to tell you that much of that, because we included in the package for you, I sent some Cardinal stuff, and I did this as an appreciation because you do so much for me. But one of your biggest fans, and I'm not so sure she's not a stalker at this point, Jeannie Sullivan is one of my dear friends here from Pet Supplies Plus, Jennings. And we love our dogs. You love your dogs. So Jeannie was responsible for the canine portion of the care package, and she's listening this afternoon.
Oh, man, that is so good. Well, I have to report that Elvis J. Bulldoggington did, when we opened the box, he immediately picked out his favorite toy, and he has been routinely raiding the box since it did get opened. And then he stole the Cardinals throw and slept on that. So he basically has taken over the entire thing. and has just been delighted with it.
I love it. And you might remember Sue Thomas here has bullies too, so I sent her that picture over the weekend. It was awesome.
It made me very happy. He's so cute.
He's a good dog. He's a little mischievous, but basically a good dog.
Well, let me get your reaction to the fires. You have a place out there in California, don't you? I don't think it's in the fire zone, but good Lord, what we're seeing here the past week.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the pictures are stunning, and you know what we're learning about the local governance and decision-making out there as it relates to water resource management and forest management is pretty stunning. You know, you just wonder if in the aftermath of something like this, are the people of California going to ever say, maybe we should look a little more closely at the qualifications and ideas of the people that we're electing here. Are they competent to save us or protect us from, you know, these kinds of terrible things? I mean, obviously, other states have figured this out. The best emergency manager in the country is Ron DeSantis in Florida, where, you know, being an emergency manager is important. And so voters have prioritized it there, but they obviously haven't done it in California.
Yeah, and to your point, this is one of your new BFFs. This is the owner of the LA Times, and he, you know, expressing regrets for endorsing Karen Bass.
First of all, we'll accept some blame, right? So at the LA Times, we endorse Karen Bass. I think right now up front, that's a mistake, and we admit that. So I thought it was very early, important early on for me to come out. And I think we were one of the few to say competence matters.
Wow. So he's kind of apologizing for that. And I mentioned you in connection with this because one of the stories from late last year is you've been invited by, and I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce his name, Patrick Soon-Shiong, to be on the LA Times editorial board.
Yeah, he's a stand-up guy. And Patrick, I think, made a bold statement there saying that they regret doing that. And obviously, you know, she was running against the developer Caruso, who, you know, I think ran a really good campaign and was viewed as being competent. Bass was kind of the local Democrat political choice. And look what happened. You know, this fire breaks out. She's in Africa doing nothing that is related to her job as mayor of Los Angeles. And when she gets back, has a couple of disastrous public appearances. The city was obviously not ready. I mean, you know, and it's sort of social engineering policy run amok there as opposed to can we get the most qualified people in these emergency positions? So, you know, people are getting a real taste that elections have consequences.
Yeah.
And Bass is at the center. Even Newsom is kind of, I think, distancing himself from Bass. When Gavin Newsom is distancing himself from you, you know you've done something
well,
wrong.
Even the New York Times had a story about Karen Bass saying before taking office, L.A.'s mayor said she would not go abroad. And they went back a few years when she said, look, I'm going to focus on Los Angeles and not travel abroad. And then they've tracked her for the last year. And she's, you know, out there going to Paris a bunch of times. Now, granted, LA has the Olympics. There might be some reason for some business, but it's interesting because she certainly is getting called out and justifiably. So what about the let me get into some politics stuff here with last week. What do you think was said between Obama and Trump at the funeral? That was very interesting, wasn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Well, it was interesting to me because Obama, of course, was at the top of the campaign to brand Donald Trump as, you know, the new Hitler. And now they're sitting at a public event laughing together. And it just underscores for me and reminds me that they meant none of it, that it was all a very unserious campaign. And it just continues this long string of people who were, you know, a couple of months ago, Trump is Hitler. And now, hey, let's laugh with Trump. If you really thought he was Hitler, you wouldn't be joking around with him in public and laughing at his commentary. So I think it just completely guts, you know, more than it already had been what the Democratic argument against Trump had been.
Well, you know, along those lines, here's Don Lemon being apoplectic about some of this stuff.
You have to indicate to the American people that this is not normal. Grinning with someone who has those that you have called a fascist over the last couple of years and the last months, that's not normal.
So he's kind of talking about Scarborough there as well, but it is interesting because I think you're right. You know, they call them these names. It's sort of one of the things, and even Trump indicated this. You know, we kind of all get along. It's politics, blah, blah, blah. But even when it comes to Trump lately, and I think you've been tracking this, he continues to be on his best behavior, doesn't he, Scott?
Yeah, he's having a perfectly fine transition, and the polling I've seen indicates the American people approve of the transition. And, you know, he's doing what you would expect a president to do. And at the same time, you don't really see the same hysterical resistance to Trump that we saw when he came in the first time. And I wonder and hope if it portends that we may have a couple of years of political peace in this country. You know, we had none for 4 years under Trump. You know, Biden was sort of chaos agent, despite his promises in the campaign for 4 years. Politically, I mean, I think the American people want a little bit of political peace, a little bit of normalcy. Wouldn't it be amazing if Donald Trump wound up, you know, making America normal or calm again?
I wonder how much a guy like John Fetterman might have to do with that as well, because, you know, some of the things that are developing with Fetterman are interesting to me.
Yeah, well, he's a new breed, and Trump is part of this, too, of politicians that, yes, exist in a political party, but don't always feel like they are bound to do everything in the party, everything in public life that their party wants them to do. I mean, he's obviously taken some strong views on Israel and immigration that are anathema to a lot of people in his party. And he's meeting with Donald Trump, which no other Democratic senator has done. I think the American people look at that and say, yeah, why can't these guys talk to each other? I mean, when did we stop talking to each other? So I don't know. I think this attitude is what people are craving right now. And I think Trump and Fetterman are at the forefront of it.
There was some buzz about you, obviously, in the aftermath of the election going to, you know, be White House spokesman. Some people were rooting for you. I was not. I wanted you to, you know, stay in the role you're in right now. But I bring this up because I don't think I've asked you this. Have you had any communication with the former president? Like direct?
No, I have not, actually. I've certainly been in touch with lots of people who are going into the White House and are around him at the moment, but no direct interactions. I'm just, I just get up every day, put my pants on one leg at a time and take on five people a night on CNN. I've been doing it for months now. That's what I do.
Well, and you're doing a great job doing it. What is going on with the Lake and Riley Act? Let me kind of go back to Fetterman. We have Wesley Bell, the new member of Congress from around here that replaced Cori Bush, voted against this in the House. There were a handful of Democrats who did. So is that why is this so difficult, you know, to Fetterman's point? Why is it so tough to pass this bill?
I ultimately think it is going to pass, and I don't think it's going to be that close. But Democrats have sort of a reflexive built-in DNA that if Republicans propose something on immigration, even if it's something quite common sense, like the Lake and Riley Act, they just feel duty-bound to oppose it. This is one of the reasons they lost the election, okay? Because people believe the Democratic Party is far too permissive when it comes to illegal immigration, and they won't even accept common sense stuff like, I don't know, detaining illegal immigrants who have committed crimes while they're in the country. And so they're going to have to rid themselves of this DNA, because if they don't, and they are seen as trying to stop Donald Trump from bringing in this illegal immigration crisis, they're going to continue to suffer politically for years to come.
Do you anticipate any major issues with the confirmation hearings that will begin here this week?
I think some of the nominees are going to lose a few Republican votes. Whether that derails them fully, I don't know. But yes, I think that some of them are not going to get the full complement of Republican votes. But in the case of, say, RFK or even Chavez de Remer, the labor secretary, they may end up getting some Democrat votes. And so I'm kind of closely looking at the matrix of votes that each gets for confirmation. But obviously the ones that are the most hot button are Hegseth, RFK, and Tulsi Gabbard. And I do expect all three of them may lose a few Republicans, but they can lose three and be okay. If they lose four, then they're in trouble.
Do you have your assignment for next weekend and for Inauguration Day? You know what you're going to be doing, where you're going to be?
Yep, I'm going to D.C. this weekend. I'll be on, you know, believe it or not, Saturday night I've been assigned to cover some fireworks display. So, you know, you'll have that to look forward to. And then Sunday, I've got evening coverage on Sunday night. And then Monday I'll be on from 10 a.m. until the speech is over, and then we'll do some post coverage of the speech, and then I'll be back on throughout the night on Monday night. So it'll be I'm trying to decide whether to wear a tuxedo on the air to pretend like I went to an inaugural ball, even though I probably won't go to one. So we'll see.
Well, I'm off on Friday and Monday. I'm heading to Las Vegas next weekend, so I'll be watching from out on the left coast, but good luck with everything. And what's the weather forecast for you? Have you looked ahead to the weather forecast in D.C.?
I did look ahead. It's like 31, 32 and partly sunny is what my current tracking is. So no precipitation, but, you know, a chilly 31, 32 degrees.
Hey, did you guys get, I know you weren't there really, but did you get whacked with the snow that came through here or not?
Oh, yeah. It was like the biggest snow in Louisville since 1998.
Right.
We had ultimately 13 or 14 inches on the ground. It was crazy. And it's still there. It hadn't gotten that warm. So, you know, we haven't had that much melting. So the kids missed an entire week of school. I took them this morning on my way out of town. I took them to school, and my wife was very pleased to hear that the kids were going to school today.
Around here, same thing. Most kids went, I think, Sue, what, on Thursday? They finally got them back, and then it snowed, you know, barely Friday. On Friday morning. But, yeah, we had the same thing. The cold temperatures has left a lot of ice out there that finally, I think, got melted this weekend. Jennings, have fun in the next week. We'll talk soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks for that beautiful gift, Mark. The dog loves it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Happy New Year to you, Yez Dogs. I should put that picture of the dog up online because it is adorable with the Cardinals blanket. We're coming back with more here. We got Sue's News after the top of the hour. We have Sue's News in the next hour. Also, Brian Ping, St. Louis native, who is one of the anchors for KNX Radio in Los Angeles, and they've been doing an amazing job. I've really gotten into the habit of saying, and you can do this with our station, Alexa, play 97.1 FM Talk. Or Alexa, play KNX in Los Angeles on the Odyssey app, and it'll come up, and you get to hear, you know, some of the coverage that they're doing live out there. And Brian's essentially going to join us here this afternoon before he takes the air out there in L.A. We got Cusimano coming up. Also, Margie Conklin, who's with the Free Press. She wrote something last week about the Facebook fact-checker situation. And the way that she explained what happened to her in particular with her stories that got, you know, essentially spiked a few years ago during the early days of the pandemic, it really is amazing and eye-opening. And we'll get to that here in just a little bit. I have some audio, though. Let me share a little bit here, because throughout the afternoon, I will point toward audio cut of the day, and I never have the time to fit everything in. Let me take you to Florida here and Ron DeSantis, because DeSantis, and by the way, Florida and North Carolina, they're still dealing with their disasters, but somebody makes the mistake of kind of invoking Gavin Newsom, and this is with DeSantis, and DeSantis just goes off here on the reporter and on Newsom.
Is it appropriate for people in your industry to try to create division and to try to create narratives anytime these things happen? Now, you're not as interested in doing that because Newsom is a D. If Newsom was a Republican, you guys would go try to, you would have him nailed to the wall for what they're doing over there. And I know we've dealt with it. We just assume in Florida, anytime something happens, it's going to be politicized by the media. So you guys sitting in judgment of Donald Trump, I mean, excuse me, I think your track record of politicizing these things is very, very bad.
Yeah, oopsie, the reporter got a, you know, a mouthful there when asked that question, and he didn't stop.
I remember when we had the Surfside Tower collapse, I had people from the Washington Post trying to blame me for it immediately without having any facts or anything. Oh, he didn't declare a state of emergency. First of all, state of emergency doesn't mean you
but
can't
Biden
respond.
Did it,
it's all that. Excuse me?
Biden did it. I think that's what she said.
Well, but what I'm telling you is you guys are trying to make an issue of it when I have watched from this seat. In fact, when I got elected governor, I was meeting with some of the other Republican governors, and what they would say is, hey, if you have a natural disaster, just know media's coming at you. They're going to do it. It's not the same.
So, yeah, he's right about that. You know, Gavin Newsom's been relatively quiet here the last couple of days. Remember, we played the audio on Friday. I think we played it Thursday and Friday. The woman that went up to him and, you know, basically grilled him and said, hey, we want some answers. I heard her doing several interviews over the weekend. And by the way, one of the things interesting about her is she didn't even lose her home. Her home was one that is still standing in Palisades, but she's got no neighbors or people around her. And they want answers at this point. When we left Friday, it looked like there was even some reporting that Karen Bass had fired the fire chief in Los Angeles. And they must have gotten together in her office on Friday afternoon, and there was a talking to, but no one got fired, and they emerged. But Bass is the one that's getting probably more of the criticism than anyone else, and justifiably so. And even Newsom, or I'm sorry, even DeSantis points to the fact that she's in Africa, right? She's not even around when all this breaks out a week ago.
That mayor of L.A., if that were a Republican mayor, I could only imagine what that would do.
Right?
I mean, you know the fires are at high risk, and you try to go to Africa or wherever she was to go on some type of voyage. You should have been there preparing and doing that. And yet I don't see a lot of heat being directed in that thing. And so, you know, I'd like to see some balance on how this is done. You could criticize the president-elect, but I think you also have to hold these other people accountable. And I have not seen that.
Well, I think some of that is going to happen. And, you know, one of the things that will be interesting is how much will climate change be blamed for all this? And let's just say that it's climate change. I've done this experiment several times. Let's just accept that it's climate change. It's our big SUVs. We're all to blame here in the Midwest with our pickup trucks, et cetera. Who cares? Well, how about talking about doing something about it? You know, what's the plan? This is what I'd love to hear, Sue. What would you do? You're going to rebuild the Palisades. It's too beautiful an area we hear, right? Same thing with Lahaina. It'll come back. So then what? What do you do? It's not like it's a hurricane where maybe the hurricane is going to take aim. We know that there's going to be fires. So can you protect homes? I know there's better technology for building homes that's more fireproof. So that's going to be part of it. Will you have water in a reservoir? Right. Can you plan? Because a wind event like this is going to happen again. And whether or not it's power lines or something else that causes it, it could be arson. And the winds are still going to create a problem. So quit with the blame of certainly climate change, and let's talk about how do we adapt. How do we adapt to this? How do we adapt here in the Midwest? How do we adapt everywhere? Because those are the only things that will end up getting any solutions in the long run. And obviously, they haven't planned for this. Somebody, you know, that woman actually made a really good point when I was listening to her in an interview, Sue. She said, and she grew up there in California, Palisades. She said, ever since I was in kindergarten, we've done earthquake preparedness drills, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't we? And she said her point was, we don't do anything about
fire.
This. Nobody's talking about this stuff. The warnings come down. You know the winds are going to kick up. And what have we done? So there's going to be a lot of questions that will have to be answered. Now, I mentioned, I think the Wall Street Journal is doing some really, really good reporting on this. And they sent someone out there to talk to a guy by the name of Robert Rivani, who in this story is described as a guy who spent 3 years. Now, he's of means, right? But he renovated an oceanfront mansion in Malibu on Carbon Beach. And this is one of the areas that just got, you know, devastated. The house was built, there's a picture in the Wall Street Journal, it's a beautiful modern home. It was built around an interior courtyard with a pond. The living spaces had limestone flooring and onyx on the wall, what is that?
Black.
Okay. Along with travertine and Roman clay plaster.
Ooh, that's really nice. Travertine is a certain kind of expensive tile.
Including the price of the original home, the project cost close to $27 million.
Oh.
Now, he renovated this place, right? He was going to list it in the spring for $40 million. That home no longer is there. And he says, how do you sum up losing over $20 million in 24 hours to any human being? And he kind of explains the math here, because this is an area in Malibu that has about 70 houses. It's known as Billionaire's Beach because these are some of the most expensive homes out there. David Geffen had one of the big homes that I think he had maybe sold. He didn't own it anymore, but you're talking about $87 million for that home. So some of these properties are, you know, approaching even $100 million. But this guy, Rivani, who has the home that I just described, was at one of his other homes in Miami. And he got a text message from his architect asking if everything was all right with the Carbon Beach house. And he said, I don't know. and he was looking, I guess he had some cameras set up, and he was looking at a fire in what looked like the back courtyard of his house. And then he woke up the next morning, and neighbors had sent pictures, and his house was gone.
Jeez.
So then you have, you know, again, this is always going to be different based on, you know, the people or the income level, all of this stuff. But in this particular case, he's got $3 million in coverage. So even if that pays out, if it pays out, he's out more than $20 million. No other insurer would cover the property for the full replacement value. And they talk later in this story about other people who don't have, you know, $20, $40 million properties that aren't sure what their payouts are going to be. And they're not really sure if, you know, they'll be able to rebuild. So you're going to hear story upon story upon story. Some people who have means that can do it. John Goodman, he probably makes enough money, has had enough money in the bank to rebuild this home. But what about the people who can't? That's one important question moving forward. Brian Ping, though, from Los Angeles with the very latest right after Sue's News.
Get more at 971talk.com.